Neil McCartan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Fan. WFAN.
Joining the show is Odyssey NBA insider Brian Scalabrine. Insider calls are presented by BetQL. Get access to data and insights from the sports books don't want you to see. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Brian, great to have you on. Thanks and welcome.
Yeah, I really enjoyed my last time talking with you. We talked a lot of Nets and it was the beginning of the season. Now it seems like 100 years ago, it's the end of the season. So Nets look pretty good though.
Yeah, and it was. And we'll get into that in just a little bit. But we talked, I think it was November 10th or something like that. So a lot has changed since then. We are in game four, technically. Thursday's game three between the Nets and the Bucks is being summarized everywhere as the quintessential NBA throwback game to the early 2000s. And that was your era. So was it?
No, I thought it was a lot of – I was frustrated actually watching that game. I like defensive battles. And defensive battles usually coincide with great offensive play. I thought it was a lot of boneheaded plays by both teams and not getting into the stuff and not understanding where you have an advantage and how to play. So, I mean, I'm not trying to be like, hey, an old man, get off my lawn or anything like that. I didn't think it was beautiful basketball with great defense and unbelievable shot making. The best stretch of the game was when Kevin Durant made those three field goals. But then think about it. You're talking about the Brooklyn Nets being up 2-0. They have, I think they're down by one, 11.8 seconds to go. Kevin Durant doesn't get a touch. That doesn't happen. Like superstars, let alone the best player in the NBA, have to get a touch on that. And I just felt like it was a lot of sloppy play and the Bucks sort of limped to the finish line on that one. And but just if you're a Nets fan, you got to be optimistic. There's no way the Nets play that bad again. And Milwaukee just looks like a team that can't compete with this Nets team. So if things don't change, Nets are going to be coming back to Brooklyn up 3-1.
Well, in the beginning, it didn't look that way. They jumped out to a 30-11 lead, the Bucks did, by the time the second quarter started. And take us into like a player's mentality. That's why I love having you on. Like as a player, if you're Brooklyn, what are you thinking starting the second quarter down 30-11?
So it's all about how the game unfolds. Like 30-11 is just a score. It's just a number. What's really happening was Brooklyn was getting a lot of good shots and Giannis was attacking in transition. So what's the small adjustment? Build a wall against Giannis and keep playing offensively. Keep trusting your team. Don't play hero ball. You understand that the shots are going to eventually fall. I know they mic'd up Blake Griffin and Jeff Van Gundy was sort of making fun of Blake Griffin. Like yeah, all we got to do is make shots. But he was right. I thought that Brooklyn was going to climb back into that game. And I wasn't shocked at all that they got back into the game in the second quarter because it was a lot of, to me, Milwaukee, that was unsustainable. Just playing Giannis getting one-on-one and everyone else jogging up the floor. And I knew Brooklyn eventually was going to make shots. But, you know, like I think when you're a player, if you can't get an open look and the team is just physically manhandling you, I think you look differently upon 30-11. Then if you are getting good looks and they have one guy, you know, playing out of his mind.
Well, I mean, the Nets ultimately in the end put up 83 points. Their season average is 118. Is it really just a case of the shots not falling or is there something else going on?
Well, I didn't think they moved it as freely as they have in the past. I thought that they got, you know, like basketball is a game that's really contagious, right? Unselfishness, it can spread. Selfishness could also spread and it could spread, you know, play to play, quarter to quarter, not just game to game or month to month or season to season. So I just thought that there was a lot of hero shots by Brooklyn and they were force feeding, trying to understand like, hey, Kevin Durant is the best player in the world, but just going one-on-one against PJ Tucker with all the length that Milwaukee has is probably not ideal. Kevin Durant, what makes him so special is there's not a single thing he can't do offensively. You can have the ball in his hands, but you can also play him off the ball. You can run two-sided action with a Joe Harris and a Blake Griffin and end up getting Kevin Durant wide open on the opposite end of the floor. So I just thought they force-fed Durant a little bit too much and those guys pressed a little bit too much. Sometimes, like you said, like the down by 30, you know, 30-11, that could change in the way that you play, the intensity that you play with. If Brooklyn would have just settled down And I actually really believe it. Brooklyn would have just found a way to get Durant more touches down the stretch. I think Brooklyn would have won that game. And we'd be talking about Brooklyn going to the conference finals just in 2 days from now.
What kind of bothered me, really, they didn't take a lead until it was only a 3-point lead until that those shots that Durant made with 1:23 left in the game. So also from a player's perspective, like playing from behind the entire game, like getting there and then falling short and then getting there and then falling short. How does it affect your game? You mentioned pressing. Is that what happens?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's about pressing that game. The way I looked at that game was, you know, Milwaukee just made enough big plays or big defensive plays. Like Lopez, I personally think that he can't play against the Nets. Like he can't play in the series just the same way that Tristan Thompson couldn't play in the series against the Nets, against the Celtics.
Yeah.
I just think when you're looking at this series, I thought Lopez made a lot of good defensive plays. But once again, it was like you get close and those guys are trying to do it themselves. They're trying to shoot the 5-point shot, the 6-point shot, as opposed to just like trusting that all these passes and all the ball movement and the spacing and everything you play with, it all adds up into you're just better than them. And I thought they just got out of their comfort zone. They did that to get back into the game. And then from then on, they just played their game, which wasn't their style at all. But we saw Brooklyn do that in game 3 against the Celtics. Remember, Brooklyn was up 19-4 against the Celtics, and the Celtics like found a way and chipped away. And what they were doing to get that 19-4 lead had a little hero ball to it.
Yeah.
And then once the Celtics got back into the league, they ended up playing that style throughout the game. It wasn't one, like, I still think it's Kevin Durant to settle you down and figure out how you're going to do it. But they just never, they played that frantic style all the way throughout that game. But that's just, I totally believe that game was just a complete one-off. Like the big lead, the low scoring, it's just a one-off. I don't think that you can look at that game and look forward to game 4 and say, oh, now we know how the Bucks are going to play. Like that was, like to me, that was an anomaly in a series. And there's always one of those games in a series.
Yeah, the unpredictability of it. We're talking with NBA champion Brian Scalabrine here on The Fan. You know, and besides all of that, the game actually ended up coming down to the last couple seconds. Listen, here's something I want to question. On the botched inbound pass, Steve Nash had one timeout left. Why didn't he use it and go back to the drawing board with, you know, some time on the board?
Yeah, I looked at it the same way you did. But if you look at where Steve Nash is his, you got to look from his point of view, right? You're looking at it from an all 10 camera one.
Yeah.
So go, like when Bruce Brown gets the ball, if you press pause, and you look at where Steve Nash is, all you see is a huge lane right down the middle of the court, right to the basket. So what he's doing is he's seeing Bruce Brown with a full head of steam, one-on-one with Lopez at the basket. And it was like, you could have drove a semi truck through this lane. Yeah. So I think from his perspective, he would have called the timeout. I just think once Kyrie ran and got the ball, at that point, I would have burned my last timeout. I would have ran over and called timeout. But once Bruce Brown got the ball, from Nash's perspective, I wouldn't have called the timeout. Because a lot of times when a play ends up like that, he thought, you know, the ball rolled from one side to the other. And when that happens, typically that play is not going to turn out very well. And you're like, okay, let me call timeout. I have the best player in the world on my team. I'm going to make sure he gets a touch this time. And by the way, go back and watch. Like Kevin Durant's his sense of urgency to get that ball, which NBA superstars and the best player in the NBA are supposed to get a catch. And go back and just watch any of Kobe's game winners, any of MJ's game winner. Like those guys work to get the ball. And I thought that the effort that Durant gave to get that ball was subpar. And like I don't know if he didn't want it because he doesn't seem that type of guy. Right. But in that moment, You on the 2-year anniversary of you popping your Achilles, you are now the best player in the world. You have a chance to put them down and out, get them down 3-0. You got to get a catch. Forget making the shot and all the things that entail after that. You got to get a catch on that one. And I was a little bit disappointed in Durant, but he'll probably back it up with dropping 40 next game and winning the game. So that's what happens when you, I'm sure Durant's going to watch it and say, okay, I got to make sure I don't mess that up again.
I mean, I'm looking at it like, oh my God, the game hanging in the balance. You got it in Bruce Brown's hands. I'm like, what are they doing here?
Yeah.
So game four. At first, I guess, have you heard anything about a James Harden return yet?
No, but it looks like Jeff Green, who is a huge addition for them, is going to be back. So that's a huge thing because they need more versatility on the floor. They just don't have as many guys. So Jeff Green back, but I haven't heard anything about James Harden so far. At least that's not what we're hearing from Hoops Hype, which is what I follow. I'm not like I'm not calling Nets or anything like that, finding out the injury report.
But say Jeff Green does make it back in time. Like, what is he? You mentioned versatility, but what else does he bring to the court?
Yeah. So any guy that can, so to make it into the NBA, on the contrary to what everyone thinks, like, you don't, you could just be a 3-point specialist and a good defender. And that's what he is. And you add the fact that he's a good cutter. He could play off superstars. Like, this is a perfect team for him. And so he provides spacing. He's confident. I've seen him in Eastern Conference Finals make, you know, big time threes, you know, when he was with Cleveland, and he can defend any position. So now they don't have to dance around Landry Shamet or Joe Harris defensively. They could just, you know, show and he can get back, or they can switch, or there's a lot of things he provides for this team. So we'll find out. We'll find out if he's, how healthy he is. Like, missing time is always tough because the rust and stuff like that, but he definitely can make an impact.
We're talking with Brian Scalabrine, the New Jersey Nets 34th pick in the 2001 draft, here on The Fan. With Harden exiting after 43 seconds, I'm sitting here thinking, all right, well, the Bucks game plan is toast. Their blueprint is toast. And I'm thinking, like, with a couple games, days off between games one and two, I think the worry among Nets fans is that the Bucks have figured it out, you know, without, you know, planning for the Nets without Harden. Have they?
You know what? I was really down on the Bucks' IQ. I was down on Drew Holiday's play, really down on Brook Lopez's play in the first half. I don't know. Like, I went into the series picking the Bucks to win. I don't think their basketball IQ is high enough. I don't think Giannis' basketball IQ is high enough. You take away that unbelievable first quarter. He had 15 in the first quarter. He was painfully average. And the free throws, oh, my gosh, I timed it one time. 15 seconds. You tell me, why would you create a free throw routine that's, like, illegal? I'm a little bit down on the Bucks right now. And I wanted them to win. You know, like, I don't like what Brooklyn did. Those guys only playing 202 minutes together. And I just think it's going to set a precedence for a lot of people in the NBA. But yeah. I am not optimistically looking at the Bucks saying they're going to figure this thing out. But with that being said, you never know. If Holiday comes in and he's a monster and he can outplay Kyrie, then it is a different series.
10-second violation on a foul shot. I mean, that didn't happen since I was in, like, third grade basketball.
it's kind of a joke, to be honest with you.
It's brutal to watch, honestly, too.
Oh, it really is. It really is brutal.
I guess so then, if you're the Nets, the adjustment for game four would be what?
Nothing. Yeah, you know, you just got to make sure you build a wall on Giannis. You can't let him and the energy. And Steve Nash said it. Like, he said it in the pregame presser. They're going to try to punch us in the mouth. We can't let that happen. And that's exactly what they did. If they didn't have that big run, you know, that game, this thing would be over. So that's the only thing I'd be looking at to see if they could take that away. If they could take away the initial burst from the Bucks, and the Bucks still play with the same basketball IQ as they did in that game, then I don't think that these guys are going to win. So it looks like Nets going to conference finals.
Yeah, I had before the season, the series started, I had the Nets in seven. You think that's would you co-sign that?
Yeah, I think it might be sooner than that, but okay. I thought it was going to be Bucks in seven, to be honest with you. But it's like I said, those guys are a fraction of themselves. Like, the Bucks just do not look that good. But you never know. Remember the Toronto Raptors were down 2-0 to the Bucks, and they and Fred VanVleet couldn't make a shot, and all of a sudden, the Raptors made a couple threes, win game three, and next thing you know, that was a ball that ended up becoming a really good series, and that was a shot that, you know, I mean, Kawhi Leonard ended up beating the Bucks four straight games. So that's not going to happen to the Brooklyn Nets, but I am kind of curious when I look at this and say, can this whole thing turn around based off of, you know, Jrue Holiday really stepping his game up?
Yeah. I'm sitting here in my Cliff Robinson New Jersey Nets t-shirt.
I love Uncle Cliffy.
I know. Rest in peace to Cliff Robinson. But you, Brian Scalabrine, were on some pretty good Nets teams. What's it like to win here?
I mean, I love it there. I mean, I think New Jersey is – well, I don't know what it's like to win in Brooklyn, but I think Jersey is one of the most underrated places I've ever been. And I love the people there and everything like that. And, you know, I remember, you know, I was so young and so naive at the time. You don't even understand how special it is to be a part of a winning team. But, you know, like just being a part of the my teammates and all that stuff. And one thing I like about the East Coast is like the people are really hard to get to know, but when you do, they're like family. So I still have a lot of friends from the area that I talk to all the time.
We're talking with Brian Scalabrine, the co-host of The Starting Lineup on SiriusXM NBA Radio. And Brian, the last time we talked, you were just gearing up, getting started with it. So how's the show been going?
Oh, good. Frank Isola is one of my favorite people to work with every day. We just have a great time in at 7 a.m. in the morning, trying to make people laugh. And, you know, we make fun of the NBA for the funny stuff that the NBA does. And but we really enjoy ourselves. And that's what I think basketball should be. You know, like anybody can talk about the X's and O's, which I could too. It's not that fun. Which what's good about it is the wacky stuff that happens in the NBA, like LeBron wanting to change his jersey number and everyone being outraged by it. That kind of stuff is the best part about the league.
And just quickly on the Knicks for a couple, I got two questions on the Knicks. Would Tom Thibodeau have been your pick for coach of the year?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, their roster was so bad. And I think Monty Williams had a good opportunity to win it, but like they're, as you're starting to see, like DeAndre Ayton, Chris Paul, and Devin Booker, like those guys are really good. Mikal Bridges, those guys are all really good. So yeah. I think Thibodeau deserved it. Their roster, which needs to get better. He doesn't want to win Coach of the Year and be out in the first round. He wants to have a really good roster so he can have a championship. And who cares about Coach of the Year at that point? So definitely deserving.
And the last one, speaking of the roster, if you are a big name free agent looking for a change of scenery, what aspects of the New York Knicks would make you consider them?
Just how organized they are and how hard they play. I think that's the biggest thing. If you want to win, that's how you win. You win with people that play hard, young players that play hard, and people who are and coaches that are organized. So I kind of look at it like that.
Well, Brian Scalabrine, thank you. It's a pleasure always to have you on. I really appreciate you taking the time.
All right. We'll touch base again throughout the playoffs.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Love to have you back on.
Sounds good.
That was Odyssey NBA insider Brian Scalabrine. Insider calls are presented by BetQL. BetQL is here to help us all make better bets through real proven analytics. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today.